Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. And this afternoon, I'm going to speak about the Billy Meier case. It seems like it's been a while since I've been on Blog Talk, and I apologize for that. And this afternoon, we're going to kind of do things old school, the way I used to and have many times, is where I kind of talk about the Meier case in free form and discuss the things that I've learned before, but also some of this new information that I'm learning. Edward Albert Meier is a man from Switzerland. He's in his late 70s. He lives in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti. And his spirit form is very, very ancient. The extraterrestrials that he has had contact with refer to his spirit form as Nokodamian. And they watch the spirit form as it has incarnated on the earth. And just on the earth, it's incarnated as Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in each one of these incarnations, this spirit has taught a very ancient universal teaching called the teaching of the spirit. Our spirit form resides in our midbrain in an area called the superior colliculus. The superior colliculus controls sight. It controls the movements related to sight and seeing. And the spirit form is referred to in the German as the Geist form. And it's really no bigger than a needlepoint. But it has a tremendous amount of energy. And the spirit form evolves through material lifetimes. And 21 days after the spirit, after the birth of the child, 21 days after the fertilization of the egg in the woman, in that little zygote there that you might call a fetus, if that spirit form comes in at 21 days. And also, something comes in called the consciousness block. Our consciousness comes in. And our consciousness, our subconsciousness, our unconsciousness, and our past life memories, which are placed in the subconscious, are all a part of that consciousness block. And they're all a part of something called the material consciousness. Now, we also have the spiritual consciousness. The spiritual consciousness, the controlling factor of the spiritual consciousness is something called the Gemut. The Gemut controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. And it will send impulses to your material consciousness. And I would speculate that that's where much of our inspiration comes from. If an artist is inspired, if a scientist has great insight, that is probably from the spiritual consciousness to a degree. Because the spirit form is very, very ancient. All of us have had many, many lifetimes before. And all spirit forms are neutral, positive. They are never evil. And this is one of the false teachings that we've had in our age that goes back even to ancient times from some of the religions that we have. You see, every time the universal consciousness creates a spirit form, you can think of that spirit form as almost part of that universal consciousness. The universal consciousness is neutral. It's neutral balanced. And all of nature seems to try to want to achieve this balance. And it's the same way, for example, if you look at water. Water always kind of tries to seek a balance. We're only slightly balanced to the positive. So our thinking should be neutral in our point of view. And neutral positive thinking leads to another kind of thinking called love. And love is very important for us to evolve. Without love, there can be no evolution. Now, this superintelligence, which created all things, the Meyer information refers to as the creation. It doesn't refer to it as God. You see, God is a term that was created in ancient times that was really inaccurate, because there was a time on the earth when there were extraterrestrials on the earth that were unbalanced in their evolution, and they passed themselves off as the creator of all things. And this is where this anthropomorphic idea of God came. You see, creation, universal consciousness, is a spiritual energy. It's an impersonal spiritual energy. It does not give you commands. The purpose of our lives is evolution. And in order to evolve, you have to have independent thinking. Without independent thinking, there can be no evolution. And love is the purpose of our life, along with the evolution of our consciousness. You see, love is the highest principle in creation. And everything follows that principle in absolute logic. So every tiny plant and every tiny animal is oriented to this love. It fulfills its purpose in creation. The infinite love of creation connects all life, because in all life, that love lies hidden. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. So this impersonal spiritual energy doesn't love you and contact you personally, but it has a different kind of love. This love is a wisdom conditioned love that expresses itself through the beauty of the many forms that creation takes, whether it's a duck or a cat or a dog or a beautiful landscape filled with trees. All of these living creatures are part of the expression of the love of creation, because creation radiates love, so that at every moment, in every point, in every place, you can experience the radiating love of creation. Now, this beautiful expression of love, which radiates forth from creation, comes out and expresses itself through impulsations. These are impulses that come out of the storage banks of our universe. And if the human has enough fine sensitive feeling, which in the German is called Empfindung, he can perceive this radiating love of creation. But today, it's very difficult for human beings to experience that radiating love. That radiating love is really part of the purpose of our life. Love is the purpose, along with the evolution of your consciousness. The two go hand in hand. Because creation is love and wisdom at the same time. Because love and wisdom go together. And creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. So you have a dual purpose in your evolution, this wisdom conditioned love. You know, true love is always associated with wisdom. It's constant. And eternal love, true love, is the realization that you are connected to all things. Now, in one of Billy's books called The Goblet of Truth, it has a beautiful paragraph that's entitled, What the Truth Knows to Say. That goes on to express that rivers, stones, plants, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involves many, many lifetimes. And that death is just the passage to rebirth. Rebirth into the world of pure spirit. And many of these creatures are connected by psychic vibrations. And these psychic vibrations, the Meyer Information explains, are like swinging waves that come from the electromagnetic source of life energy in all of the universe, which is creation itself. And these swinging waves, they connect all life. And that's part of the infinite love of creation. Genuine, real love radiates from creation, according to Meyer Information, 107,000 times faster than the speed of light, where normal affective love radiates forth at about the speed of light and dissipates and can be blocked by any matter that gets in its way. But we have a higher love, a love that's from the very nature of creation itself. And understanding the creation is the most important thing for the Earth humans, because our biggest problem is that we no longer understand creation. So this man in his late 70s has a very ancient spiritual consciousness and is now incarnating on the earth as kind of a universal herald, only to bring back to the people of the earth a very, very ancient teaching that came to the earth many millennia ago and was given through the teaching of the ancient kings of wisdom and was then taken in and distorted, in some cases, intentionally by some of these ish-wishes, and also through confusion through the earth humans. And now today, through religion, various kinds of religion all over the world, we have an un-understanding of the nature of life and the nature of creation. And because of our un-understanding, we are wildly going into extremes. Now we have extreme Islamic fundamentalists. We have extreme population. We have extreme sports. We have extreme addiction to various kinds of things because there's no stability and there's no balance because we don't understand who we are, we don't know where we come from, and we don't know the purpose of our life. And we really need to come back to the controlling of our thinking. Because good thinking leads to good feelings. Good feelings will lead to good habits. Good habits lead to good circumstances in your life. You are the master of your own destiny. You can control the circumstances in your own life. But first, you have to start by controlling your own thinking. And if you focus on thinking good thoughts, healthy thoughts, like focusing on the love of creation, you will create stability in your own consciousness, peace in your own consciousness, because it's your own mental disharmony that causes your suffering to increase. And likewise, if your thoughts are focused on the information that I've just been discussing, which is related to the universal nature of life, then you can have within you peace and harmony and fulfillment, and your consciousness will be like a flourishing garden which grows forth and springs forth with green things that radiate life and abundance. But if you allow negative thinking to get into your consciousness, then it's like a weed that sprouts, and these repeating thoughts will return again and again and again. And you have to learn thinking skills like a meditation, because meditation is a way of kind of calming yourself down, almost like a hypnotist calms people down. Your meditation and learning to control your thinking and learning to focus your thinking on a thing, and you can start out by thinking of a color. You want to visualize blue. Think of an ocean, an ocean with moving, swirling waves. And imagine yourself on a boat on this ocean. And just feel this experience for a minute. Now think about green hills, rolling hills, beautiful trees, all of nature in front of you. Think of a yellow sun, its warm heat on the summer. Now focus perhaps on a rose. And then still your mind and get rid of all the negative energy. Exhale the negative energy. Now come bring yourself back to a point of peace. Edward Albert Meyer started to get telepathic messages at about 5 years old. And he would get these messages, sometimes just mental images, and he would go off into the forest and he would play. And then one day he got a message from this extraterrestrial human man named Spock. And then out of the sky came this silvery pear-shaped craft, which landed in a field nearby, and out stepped a 1,000-year-old extraterrestrial, a man named Spock, who eventually brought Billy up into the ship, and the craft took off and went into low Earth or orbit from some 70,000 meters. And young Edward Albert Meyer had his first meeting with his mentor, a man named Spock, a man who was from a race of extraterrestrial humans which live about 500 light years from here on a world called Era. And Era is very Earth-like. Same kind of gravity, the same size, a very similar biosphere. But it's like a pristine Earth, like our Earth 1,000 years ago, when there was a very thick, concentrated oxygen, and when the Earth was teeming with life. And it was, our Earth was much like a paradise. And there are other worlds in our Milky Way galaxy which still are like a paradise. The Pleiaren have been on the Earth in the ancient past, and they've been tracing the incarnations of the spirit form over time. And Spock knew that this ancient spirit form was incarnating on the Earth again. So this was planned ahead of time, that they would have first Spock mentor Edward Albert Meyer for 11 years, and then another spiritual mentor would be put in place, a woman named Asket from a parallel universe to us here on the Earth would be his mentor, because they were preparing this spirit form to come on the Earth to teach this teaching again. And then Billy had 11 years of no contacts. And then his contacts began again in the middle 70s with Semyase, and they were cut short because Semyase was involved in an accident, which was very damaging. So his contacts with Semyase ended prematurely. They were picked up with two extraterrestrial human men, one named Ta and the other named Quetzal, who still visit Edward Albert Meyer, even though now they realize his spirit form is more ancient than theirs. Even though now Edward Albert Meyer gives to the Pleiaren spiritual teachings for them. So, reality, as it often is stranger than any kind of fiction you could ever imagine. So young Billy lived a very difficult life growing up in Bulak, Switzerland. His father punished him very severely. He was an outcast in his village. He spent much time skipping school. He was, during that time, he had these contacts. And during the contact I was telling you, Svath placed a device on his head which unlocked the wisdom of Billy's predecessor personalities. So at that point, Billy started to know the future, and he started to know things that he otherwise wouldn't have understood in such a young life. So Billy's teaching from Svath also included something about the time that we live in. We live in a time called the third millennium, a time of maliciousness and confusion, a time when maliciousness and confusion will spread over the earth, a time that started in 1945 when the atomic bombs were exploded on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That was the landmark, the beginning of this 800-year period called the third millennium, this very, very difficult transition time called the third millennium. Billy's written many books now, something like 39 books, I believe. I've only read three, one of which is called The Goblet of Truth. And in The Goblet of Truth, it talks about the secret dark order that will come to power on the earth. The secret dark order will take all the money and the power, and the people of the earth will become indolent and obtuse. Indolent meaning slow to understand. They will be very insensitive. And you see this insensitivity, people. We've often heard about the dumbing down of people. And there's also an indifference. The Meyer information predicted the general indifference of people that would occur during the third millennium. We see that now. People are connected to their cell phones. They're indifferent to the world around them. And that indifference is what's causing us to just destroy nature. And we'll destroy a whole forested area and put a road through, or destroy a forested area and create a parking lot. And we're just causing a complete imbalance of nature. You see, the forests moderate our weather. They cause shade, which keeps the soil cool, which keeps it from getting too hot in the summer, which keeps the air cooler around the forest. And there used to be, there's still some, but there used to be giant forested areas all over the earth. And that soil would stay cool. But now the soil, because we've continued to destroy these forests, people move to the area where the weather is moderate. And they destroy the forests. They move to the area where there is water. which is the area where there's a forest. They destroy the forest. And they no longer get the moderating factor that's there in the forest. So we get extreme weather is all over the planet. The forests slow the wind currents down. The forests even kind of pull the heat in the winter. And the globalists talk about, you know, the whole weather issue, and they come up with carbon tax, you know, anything. The point of the matter is population is not a factor of space alone. We think in our simplicity that if there's enough space there, well, then we might as well let our population increase. There's 6.5 million square miles in the South Pole. There's nobody living there. Nobody wants to live where it's 40 below zero. So the sheer factor of space is not what the problem is. People crowd into these beautiful, moderate areas, and the forests come down. The plants are killed. The animals are killed next. And we create the unstable world that we live in now, where people are crowded together in these massive cities like New York, Los Angeles. Some of the cities in China are even bigger than ours. And the pollution is so horrific, people have to walk around with masks on. Because we've allowed our population to grow up to, what are we now, 8 billion people? And now we're seeing the immigrants swelling and swarming all over the earth, because this massive overpopulation leads to conflict in the struggling for limited resources. And now we have the war that's going on over there in Syria, in the civil war, and the interaction between Turkey and Russia, which was prophesied in Contact 2:15 of the Henoch prophecies, where it's discussed that there could be two civil wars in America and that our great country will be broken up into 5 different areas. This is the function of the secret dark order. They'll create electronic chips that they'll try to have everyone take the chip so they can control you, so they can control your thinking. Our leaders will become megalomaniacal in this age. They already are. They will twist things. You know, we see all these shootings. If there really are these crazy people, if they aren't just false flag operations where people are brought in to do these shootings, if they aren't just pinned on patsies, then you ought to arm the whole public. You'd put an end to these shootings. Any crazy person that goes out and tries to start killing everybody is going to be shot in no time. But so you can see the strange world we live in. We're going to make it peaceful by taking everyone's guns away. Well, of course, the crazies are always going to get the guns. So it's not the guns. It's the thinking of the person that begets the insanity. We live in an insane society that's rushing headlong to our own destruction. It's only a change of consciousness which can bring peace. It's only understanding our connection to all things. It's only learning to control our thinking. You can compare the evolution of your consciousness to a tree, whereby you have the visible part, which is the trunk and the crown. And this is symbolic of the external realm of life. The roots symbolize the inner realm. Your inner realm is where you do your innermost thoughts, your innermost feelings, and your contemplation. That's how you determine truth. You can determine truth. You don't need physical evidence to identify truth. Truth comes through your innermost thinking, through your innermost feelings, your innermost contemplation. If your external and internal growth is in balance, you'll have a firmly rooted tree which withstands difficult circumstances. If an imbalance comes into the psyche, then you have instability. It's the imbalance in your thinking that causes your suffering to grow. There's an ancient proverb that states, everyone is the smith of his own luck, his own success, his own happiness. Everyone is the architect of his own fortune. You make your luck through the radiating power of your own consciousness. An evolution of the consciousness can only occur through the independent thinking of each human being. But on our planet, our thinking is becoming more and more stunted. You know, there's an aura of negativity that exists on our planet. It's fueled by the religions. And people are more and more influenced by this negativity that exists on our planet. And we have to be independent of this negativity. And it starts through independent thinking. Again, it's your own inner and innermost as your own intellect, your own thoughts, your contemplations, your own feelings, which determine truth. And eventually, if you're able to determine truth, you can start to develop self-responsibility. I want to play a quick link here, a quick clip, which talks about the Apophis, which is a coming asteroid, which has a chance to hit the Earth. Here, let me put this on here for you.
This episode of Nova Science Now, they call it Apophis, an asteroid that could be on a collision course with Earth.
If Apophis did impact, it would leave a blast area of around 60 to 100 miles across, and it would dissipate energy about equal to 100 nuclear bombs going off at the same time.
It could even create a West Coast tsunami.
We would have 3.5 hours of waves 55 feet high and larger crashing onto this shore.
Is there anything we can do?
Unlike any other natural disaster. This one, if we use our brains, we can prevent it.
And what if I told you that some scientists are convinced that our weight and eating habits are mostly predetermined?
What makes some people weigh 350 pounds and other people 150 pounds? To a very large extent, those are genes.
There are days that I just eat and eat and eat and eat. I don't know when I'm full, really, but I can't stop it.
Could it be that it's not a lack of willpower, but a mutation in a gene?
It will be very difficult to try to get slim enough when your brain is screaming, you are hungry, you must eat.
You remember this, don't you? The periodic table. Can you name all the elements?
Number 44.
Ruthenium.
Oh, very good.
We're going to introduce you to a couple of characters.
Hello.
Who are trying to create new elements that never existed before. All of that and the cosmic perspective on this episode of Nova Science Now. Welcome to a new season of Nova Science Now.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, astrophysicist and your host. In each show, we'll bring you several stories, breaking news from the frontiers of science. You'll meet my fellow scientists exploring the universe, from the tiniest microbes to the farthest reaches of the cosmos. First, let's take a look at our own solar system. It can seem like an orderly place, where the planets chug along in their orbits like trains on a track. But there's no guarantee those tracks will remain clear. Because in addition to the planets, there's a lot of other stuff in the solar system. And eventually, their paths will cross. Now, if you happen to live on one of those planets, that would be bad. One night in 2004, telescopes spotted a tiny dot moving across the sky. That dot was actually an asteroid named Apophis, and it seemed to be headed towards Earth. When seen even through our most powerful telescopes, Apophis shows up as nothing more than just a moving speck of light. But the latest data tell us that this asteroid may be as wide as 1,000 feet.
That's bigger than the Rose Bowl.
Now imagine that hunk of rock hurtling through space on a collision course with Earth. It sounds like something from the movies. Remember Deep Impact? Or Armageddon?
Hydrogen!
Where Bruce Willis saves the world? The movies were a little silly. Somehow all the flaming fragments in Armageddon had good aim and hit only famous buildings. But they were inspired by a basic and frightening truth about our solar system. It's easy to think of the solar system as a big, wide, open playing field. The sun in the middle and just a few planets in orbit around it. But in fact, between the planets, it's filled with debris of all sizes, some as small as a pea, others as large as cars, houses, even mountains. We've been hit before by these things. And you know something else? We're going to get hit again. In space, they're just cold.
Okay, sorry for that. Had a little distraction on this end, but I wanted to talk about Apophis anyway, so that actually was maybe just a case of good timing in some ways. Not always what you plan, but anyway, contact 475 talks about this thing called the Red Meteor or Apophis. This is, again, part of the prophecies associated with the Meyer information. And Billy says, they also call this, by the way, the Red Meteor. And regarding the Red Meteor that endangers the Earth, on the 13th of April 2029, end of which we have already spoken on the 16th of September, I've been asked about certain things and therefore would like to know how big that bloke is. To my knowledge, the terrestrial astronomers have already detected it for quite some time and are calling it Apophis or something. It shall either hit the Earth in the year 2029, which I may still be alive then, or only by whizzing by very closely. Should it be the latter, the meteor then would reappear in the year 2036, and its close approach to Earth could really lead to a catastrophe if the scientists undertake nothing against it. So yes, we are dealing with something called Apophis, or the Red Meteor, which the Meyer information says is a real event. And let's go on and listen to what Patah has to say about the Red Meteor. He says its size is about 350 meters. What you were saying regarding the great danger that the Red Meteor represents to Earth, the scientists know about it. And if there will be no special influence by these outer soul trabants, again, in parentheses, it says here, note by the translator, objects circling around or at a great distance from our sun, a catastrophe really threatens the Earth. In order to avoid it, the terrestrial scientists also are urged to undertake every conceivable possibility to ultimately push the meteor from its orbit. Now, it's interesting that Apophis is actually an ancient Greek word or an Egyptian word meaning ship. Very interesting. as well. I think Apophis was also a character in one of the movies, Stargate SG-1. Very, very interesting. Anyway, it's also known as the Red Meteor, the Meyer material. Warns us about it. Billy next says, to my knowledge, various models exist for this purpose, but the scientists cannot come to a mutual agreement on this. You're saying that the fellow shall be pushed from its orbit, and I gather from it that blowing it up is out of the question. Therefore, only a reaction principle could be applied. For example, an extremely strong nuclear reaction unit, sun sail principles, or atomic explosions near the meteor could push it out of the way. So anyway, this is one of the threats that we face. You know, there are many threats that are potentially coming in our future that the Meyer information warns us about. And the key here is learning to control our thinking. And the problem is that we here on the Earth are not so good at learning to control our thinking. Anyway, Billy had these contacts with Spoth at a very young age. His first contact was with a man named Spoth, who was a Pleiaran. The Pleiaran live about 500 light years from Earth. In ancient times, they were called the Pleiadians. They were called the Pleiadians for a while in modern times as well. The Native Americans called them the Pleiadians. But they're not from our Pleiades. In fact, they left the Earth in 1995, along with, my understanding is, all the extraterrestrials that were here. There were some 2,000 extraterrestrials. They were in bases in North America and in Asia. And there was a base in Switzerland with these extraterrestrials that had been for like 350 years. These are human beings, by the way. They came from the Lyra Vega systems, from the Pleiaran star system, from worlds close here to the Earth. But they left in 1995. They wouldn't tell us why. It had something to do with some events, I believe, that are taking place right now on the Earth. There were for a while, I don't know if they're still here or not, but there were extraterrestrials called the Hyperboreans that lived inside of Mount Shasta, which I believe is in Washington State. And these extraterrestrials had been on the Earth for 100,000 years or something like that. They were blonde people. You could occasionally see their spherical golden-colored craft coming out of the eastern slope of that mountain. Now, sometimes people would come up to the mountain and come in contact with them, and they would be paralyzed by these weapons that the Hyperboreans had. There was another group of extraterrestrials on the Earth called the Hasters. The Hasters lived in a base in the North Sea. They were brought here by the Pleiaran themselves. The Hasters are closer to our evolution. They don't have the ability to travel from star to star the way the Pleiaran do, the way the Illyrians did, the way also the Sirians did. And it's very interesting. There are multiple different ways these extraterrestrial groups travel from star to star with almost no time passing. And one method was really captured my imagination. While they were traveling in their ships within a solar system, they couldn't travel any faster than light. But once they got out of a solar system, they could jump from star to star system to star system. So once they would say, for example, in our solar system, get outside the asteroid belt, that they would, for example, could jump instantly to a solar system like Alpha Centauri, where they would rematerialize their ship and everything within their ship. And this is where we get to part of the nature of creation itself, which is extremely mysterious and in some ways confusing to us, because I talked about creation, but really, creation has a structure. It has seven rings. Our universe has seven rings. that are concentric rings. In the very center is called the central core. This is the very center of creation. And it's not solid. It's not material. It radiates this energy. And these radiates go out. This radiating, this fine matter goes and expands from the central core to the what's called the second layer, the Ur core belt, to the third layer, the Ur space belt, where this fine matter slowly starts to become solid and enters into the fourth layer of our universe, which is the material belt. This is where matter exists, the planets, the suns, the galaxies, the meteors, the comets, the gases, dark matter, and other things. And then eventually all matter goes from physical state back into a kind of an energetic, and I think it flows out into this transformation belt. Anyway, then the sixth layer is called the creation belt, or the expansion belt. And then finally there is the seventh layer, which is this displacement belt, which keeps the matter in this universe separate from another universe. So whether you're talking about the universe, the creation, or the creation universal consciousness, these are all synonyms. And this creational universal consciousness, it does not work the same way as the human consciousness. Because again, it's an impersonal spiritual energy. And our universe is bigger than just the solid state matter universe physical belt, which is belt four. Our scientists do not realize that these other belts exist. And they erroneously think that the age of our universe is only the age of the material in that belt. So they think the universe is only about 15 billion years old, when in fact our universe is about 46 trillion years old. Now, I was talking about a little while ago about the spirit form of this very ancient spirit form called Nicodemian, that currently is a spirit form that is manifested as Edward Albert Meyer. Nicodemian was one of the first human beings in our universe. His spirit form is 9.6 billion years old. So currently, Billy has the oldest spirit form in our universe. There were spirit forms before his, but those spirit forms have long since gone through all seven stages of evolution and are back in the area of the pure spiritual realms. There is something called the absolute absolutum, which is the encompassness of all the universes. There are many universes. There are millions of universes. We have a sister universe, a parallel universe called the Tao universe, which was created at the same time that our universe was, 46 trillion years ago. It's the home of Askets people, who are called the Timmers. The Timmers descend from the Lyrians. The Plarion descend from the Lyrians. Some of the races on Earth descend from the Lyrians. The Lyrians themselves came in the Milky Way galaxy something like 29 million years ago and settled in the area of Lyra Vega, particularly in what we call the Ring Nebula now, which looks like a giant eye in space. It's actually a destroyed star, the ionizing gases of a star. And to the Plarion, it's a symbol of evil, because there was an ancient Ishwish who was not so wise in terms of the spiritual teachings, but probably very, very wise technically. And he destroyed that star, and now it exists for all these millions of years as a symbol to the evil of man. So our universe is actually evolving. Creation is evolving, and it is the lowest form of a universe. The universes have 10 to the 49th power number of forms. So our universe will expand, keep expanding up to some limited size, and then begin its contraction phase. And then when it completely contracts, it will go into a dormant phase, which lasts a long time as well. The expansion and contraction takes like 316 trillion years. It's called a great time. That's a very, very long time. Our Milky Way galaxy is just one galaxy in our universe. There are billions of galaxies in our universe. So the creation is immense beyond immense. It's more than we can even imagine. Just in our Milky Way galaxy, according to Pleiaren, there are around 587 billion stars and planets. There are 7 million solar systems in our galaxy, 7 million, that have planets which can support higher forms of life. So the universe is thinly settled with human forms of life. 2.6 million solar systems have highly developed human civilizations on them. There are other galaxies besides ours. There's about 1.1 billion human civilizations if you take into consideration all of these other galaxies. And that may be an underestimate. I may not have the most accurate information there from the Meyer contacts. So when we're talking about the structure of the universe and the size of creation, it's really much, much more massive than we can even begin to understand. So we need to start understanding our universe. We need to start understanding creation. And in Contact Report 18, it tells us, whenever we see something beautiful, be it a flower or an animal or a human being or anything else, we should bring it and associate it with the infinite beauty of creation. All human beings should trace their joy back to the infinite joy of creation. All the beauty of nature should be related back to creation. Each time we see cognition reach expression, we can relate that back to creation. And creation exists in every human being as a fragment of itself. The knowledge of creation can help you with inner peace, with insecurity, with wrong feelings. Our personality will become more powerful the more that we know about creation. And the more blessed will be our entire life and our work. And it says in Contact Report 18 that the more his intelligence is effective in this direction, the more it gains radiating light. The more powerful his personality becomes, and the more blessed his entire life and work. So we should be contemplating the nature of creation. And when we have clarity of consciousness, it produces a fine sense of sensitive feeling. Remember I talked about empfinden, this fine sensitive feeling that's the beginning of sensing the radiating love of creation. Now, what kind of stifles that ability, what the wrong thinking we have here on the earth, is called material intellectual thinking. And that's what we need to switch off. Semyase said it this way to Billy in Contact Report 18. She said, as well as the switching off of material intellectual thinking, material intellectual thought powers, these include egoism, materialism, pride, envy, greed, and jealousy, and so forth. Because only this guarantees the recognition in the following of the creational laws. So if we are focused on material intellectual thinking, we'll mostly be people that have a thirst for adventure, we have pity, self-pity, all sorts of those kind of thoughts. The old nature of material intellectual thinking leads to unlogic. Now, I talked a little bit about the psyche earlier. I think I mentioned the psyche. We have a material consciousness. The psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of our material consciousness. We have a material subconscious, a material unconscious. The material consciousness is more than just our conscious mind, though. The material consciousness also deals with the unconscious. For example, if you touch a hot plate and you jerk back your hand so quickly, that comes from your subconscious, from your unconscious. It comes from the nervous system, not from the conscious mind. Our spirit form, our Geist form, is not completely conscious yet. It will be when we go through all of our incarnations. There will be also an age of recognitions at the fifth evolutionary stage where we start to recognize our past lives. That's thousands, hundreds of thousands of years, millions of years beyond where any Earth human really is now. Sometimes people have a little bit here and there, but not really, have not entered into the age of recognitions yet. The spirit does not think about its former body, its former life. It doesn't have conscious thought the way that we do in our material conscious. The spirit and the comprehensive consciousness block, they have no desire to remain in the body after death. They don't miss the people that they've left behind. We spend about 1.52 times in the spiritual realm that we spend in the physical. So if you're 75 years old when you die, normally you'd spend about 114 years in the afterlife in the spiritual realm. Spirit forms are really required to have material lifetimes in order to evolve. Now we're running, I think, a little close on time. Well, way close on time. So maybe we should end it right there. I'm going to read really very quickly something that Emmanuel said about reincarnation. Emmanuel preached powerfully, saying, "Behold, creation stands above humanity, above God, and above everything." Remember, God is a term for a human being, really, not the universal consciousness. "It appears to be perfect by human comprehension, but it is not so. Even the universal consciousness is not perfect. It's still evolving. Since creation is spirit and thus lives, it even must forever perfect itself. But since it is one within itself, it can perfect itself by the way of its own creation, through the generation of its own spirit forms." Anyway, I thank all the folks for listening to the archive. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a good evening.